Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. And today we've got Tolek on the show. Tolek, cheers for connecting, mate.
Oh, my pleasure. It's great to be here. Thank you, Peter.
No worries, no worries. Now, you're someone that's stirred up a bit of interest. I've had a lot of people contact me to try and get you on the show, and I've been blessed with that opportunity. In saying that, would you like to explain, I guess, give a brief overview of who Tolek is?
Sure. First of all, I'm an earth person. I'm living an earth human life. I had a 17 year career in the healthcare software industry, in marketing and finance and operations, later in management. Then I spent a little bit of time in venture capital, and then I went into international banking. I was there for about 12 years and primarily in operations. Also as a high-end sort of like senior client liaison, I will tell you and everybody else, I'm glad I'm out of that industry. I have never in my life seen so much fraud and corruption at the highest levels of banking. And the more money that's involved, the more...
So was that something you personally witnessed, a lot of the corruption?
Witness. I don't know if witness is the right word, but I'll give you an example. Excuse me. I remember a situation with the asset management firm I was with, and we were the client had, probably $115 million, and he wanted to commit about $35 million with us. And he chose to move some of his money from a Spanish bank, which I won't name right now, and he was going to place it with one of the correspondent banks that we use. And I consider myself a pretty intelligent guy. I'm fluent in English, and I'm pretty good with Spanish, maybe a 7 out of 10, but I prepared myself before making this phone call. And so I called the vice president of the bank in Spain, and we spoke in Spanish and in English, and she basically said, no, we're not doing it. I said, excuse me? This client has money all over the place. The money that we're looking to move is only about a third of what he's got in your bank, and you need to do what's necessary. You know, the client has already talked to you. He's already provided instructions, and she said, we're not doing it. I then said, okay, our asset management firm is going to report your bank to the Central Bank of the EU. First of all, we'll go to the Bank of Spain and then the Central Bank of the EU. And she said, go ahead. We don't care. I was astounded at that kind of arrogance. And they can't do it, and they won't do it, because if somebody has had $35 million or $15 million or even, I don't know, $10 million in somebody's bank for a while, that bank has taken temporary ownership of it. They've let it out and leveraged it into different investment facilities, and it's likely leveraged at 20-1 or 30-1 or whatever it is. And if somebody were to force the issue and make them pull that 30 or 35 million out of their bank, they would have to go find some money to replace it, because you just can't. It's all entwined. It's like an octopus with tentacles. And they're like, we're not doing it. And she didn't care that we
system set up.
It was, and that was, that's just one. I had a number of experiences where we dealt with JP Morgan, HSBC, Credit Suisse, and on and on and on. And it was stall, aggravations, headaches, tension, stall, lies, lies, all the time. All the time. I don't miss it at all.
So how did you end up getting out of it and doing what you're doing now? How did all this come into fruition?
It's actually, the question is timely, and how it happened was timely. I was, the asset management firm that I was working for, the investors came to the management team that was in place before I got there, and they said, we've provided as much money as we're going to provide to you guys. We've been doing it for 9 years. You haven't provided us with the kind of returns that we want. We're done. You're not getting any more money. We're shutting you down. So I was out of a job. Literally. It's like they gave me basically 2 months of money, and that was it. And I was making good money, but I wasn't making great money. And interestingly enough, so that was like March of 2011, and September of 2010 is when I had the recontact experience with the commander, the gentleman I now know as the commander of the Primary Andromeda Council Biosphere. And with that meeting, I started asking a whole bunch of questions, because I had met him, I discovered in September of 2010 that he was the same man who came to visit me in September, August of 1993. And, you know, as you and I were have talked before, that August 1993 experience was the trip that I took from Tucson, Arizona, and I went in his craft three times over the course of a week and a half, back in time to Western Kentucky, rural Virginia, in like the 1840s. So we needed to do two things. He needed to step my body up, because a 3D organic being cannot travel through time or back in time unless you raise his vibrational energy up to 4D, the fourth dimension. So we had to do that. And long story short, over the course of a week and a half, three separate trips, we watched this family of four living in and they're on their little homestead, and the daughter was 3 or 4 years old, with blonde hair, blue-eyed, sort of jewel of the father's eye. And there was a barn fire, and she died. And I asked this gentleman, the commander of this biosphere, who I just knew to be a man that I knew. I didn't know why I knew him, but I knew him at the time. I recognized him as soon as I saw him. I said, out of all the possible experiences, why would you have me see this one? And he said, there are two reasons. One, genetically, this family is related to you, to your earth physicality. The second and more important is the fact that at some future point in Earth's history, there are going to be a lot of changes going on. We as fourth dimensional humans don't experience death. When we feel like we've had enough experiences of the fourth and we're ready to go to the fifth, we simply make a choice to become fifth dimensional beings. There is no death at all. Two is, because all of you on Earth live 3D organic lives, the breadth of your experiences is much higher and steeper and lower and deeper than we experience. And you also experience the intense feelings of loss and grief that comes with what you call death. And we all of us wanted to experience through your eyes, through your feelings, through your heart, what it's like to be an Earth human and have to go through this process. They didn't tamper with anything. What we did was we went back through time three times, and we were watching this family from a viewport in his craft up in space, kind of thing. So it was an intense experience. So what I learned was, in 2010, when he contacted me again, I recognized him. I'm like, oh, you're the guy from 1993. I've got some questions for you. And that's how all of this started. And then many months later, I think it was the last week of April 2011, is when I created and published the Andromeda Council website, and it went live. And then I had my first formal interview, I think it was in late August of 2011. And it's been, my life has been changed ever since. It's been a crazy 4 years. It's been fun and it's been enjoyable. But I, you know, if somebody had asked me when I was 35 or 40, "Hey, do you think you'd be doing this, or this is what you'll be doing when you're in your early 50s, mid 50s?" I'm like, "What are you talking about?" I had for all intents and purposes a pretty normal career like a lot of other people. So it's like definitely life-changing.
It is, and I could say the same. If somebody was telling me a few years ago what I'll be doing now, I wouldn't believe it. But stranger things that happen, I guess, and the strange stuff is really normal with all this. But with that said, your experiences obviously started, like you were saying, was it back in the 90s they started, or did it start before the 90s?
Right. It's a valid question. There are a couple of issues which people may or may not have heard before, but first of all, to answer the first party question, in a subsequent series of questions and answers that I got from this gentleman, the commander of the Primary Andromeda Council Biosphere, as well as Vice Chairwoman Tanya, who's also a diplomat. She's a senior diplomat in her own right. Andromeda Tonka, sorry, Ambassador Tonka Huene, he's the spiritual advisor from the Andromeda Council to all of the people of Earth. And there's some other people I've talked to, but I learned that they had been contacting me and communicating with me since age 5. I also learned from them that the original soul that was in this body left at about a year and 2 or 3 months, something like that.
So
Apparently,
you would be a walk-in
yeah,
then?
I just learned this recently. I would be a walk-in. I had some kind of mini death of this body. If you talk to my mom, she would say, "Oh yeah, you were really sickly and you were a weak little kid, and I had to love you and nurse you and help you grow up to be a strong young man." But apparently, I went through some kind of mini death, and the soul that was originally in this body left at about a year and 2 months, a year and 3 months, and this same soul and this personality that animates this body that I'm in today has been here since 1 year and 2 or 3 months. Consistent with that information is what I learned in subsequent conversations with this gentleman, the commander, and others of them, is that he's originally from the planet Dakotay, which is one of four planets that revolves around the star Taygeta in the open star cluster called the Pleiades, also known as the Pleiades constellation. His wife is from Dakotay. Tonka is also from Dakotay, the ambassador Tonka. So, and there are others, but as is known around the universe, the people of the Pleiades, and this is just people from one star system, the people of the Pleiades play a special role in different organizations, and they hold some kind of special status with the Andromeda Council. And they know me. They know me because that soul that came to animate this body at a year and 2 to 3 months, that soul is originally from planet Dakotay. So I know these people. They know me. I've lived up in the Andromeda Council biosphere and worked for years and years and years. And surprise, guess what? You're going back to Earth. I'm like, "No, I don't want to. Do I really have to go?" Yeah, you got to go back." "No, not again. They're crazy down there. They all kill each other." "Yeah, but it's a special time. You got to go back." "All right." So here
I agree. And look, this is funny because we've hardly spoken, and I've got similar experiences. I've got past life or future life recollection of the Pleiades. I've got connections to Andromeda and Sirius and also Orion. So this is funny what you're saying, and there is that, soul connection with these different groups because we're multifaceted beings having a multidimensional experience, and it depends, I guess, what part of ourselves we're tapping into. So one of my main contacts from the Pleiades is actually a light being from the star Merope, an actual star, not the planet, though I have lived life on a planet, basically what you're describing, which is near together, in the Pleiades as well. So this is funny where Well, I'm getting some correlations and funny synchronicities of what you're saying. What do you know? What the the connection with the Andromedan Council is from your experience? Because I've had a few experiences with the Andromedans. I don't know if it's the council. The council I've had connections with is, you know, Ryan.
It's a good question. First, I'll give everybody the formal definition of the council. It is an intergalactic, interstellar, interdimensional governance and development body of aligned benevolent star systems and planets of intelligent life for worlds in both the Milky Way and Andromeda galaxies. And so the best way to think of it is sort of like an interdimensional, interplanetary, deep space United Nations for worlds in both the Milky Way galaxy, as well as the Andromeda galaxy. As an example, my good friend Mark Kimmel, his soul essence is originally from a planet in the Andromeda galaxy. Conversely, my soul essence is from a planet revolving the Taygeta star system in the Pleiades. So I'm what somebody would call Pleiadian, just because the planet I come from is from Taygeta. There are three other planets. There's Vela, V-E-L-A, Pyra, P-Y-R-A. Those two are bigger than Dakote. And the smallest planet is Era. And Era is the planet where Semyasi, and for everybody who's ever researched or been interested in the Billy Meyer story, Semyasi simply means Star Woman. That's all it means. She is from the planet Era, E-R-R-A, which revolves around the Taygeta star system. If you see people from the planet Dakote, they all look like tall, dark-haired, good-looking Native American men and women. And the reason for that is that approximately 50,000 years ago, a bunch of their people in a colonization effort decided to purposefully leave Dakote, explore Earth, and settle here. And they did. And those people, I think they arrived in what would be, they originally arrived in what people would consider to be the South Pacific. Some people would call it Lemuria. They migrated when all the earth changes were happening. They went up across Asia. They came across what people would call the Bering Strait. They arrived in the Pacific Northwest. They are essentially the people known in what we call the United States today. They are the Dakota, Lakota, Nakota, Comanche, Apache, Hopi, and the list goes on and on. They are predominantly all of the Western Native Americans in the U.S. Those are the great 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 grandchildren of the people from the planet Dakota. It's a fascinating story. I was astounded to learn that. That's where my people come from.
With the original people, the Aboriginals, also known as the original people here in Australia, they've got huge connections going to the Pleiades as well. I'm actually going to talk to one of the elders later today, but there is a huge connection, and what they're finding now scientifically too, through Stephen and Evan Strong, who I've also done shows with, that basically everyone on the planet has also got their DNA, the original people's DNA, which they said they also came from the Pleiades, from my understanding as well. So this is where there's this huge correlation and connections throughout the world, connecting back to the Pleiades. And some of what I'm understanding is that these beings are actually coming from the future back in time, though time is an illusion.
Correct.
And correct. This is where people have a hard time understanding that. But is that what your understanding is of this reality too, with the Pleiadian to Earth connection, that they're from the future?
I've never heard it expressed that way, and I will tell you why. Now I'm going to quote you. What you said early on in the show, all of 15 minutes ago, is that all of us, we here experiencing life, are, and I'm paraphrasing you, that we are truly multidimensional beings without regard to time. And that's very, very, very accurate. Now I'm going to break that down a little bit. The word, that long word, multidimensional, is split into two parts. Multi meaning many, of course, dimensional meaning dimensions. And so we are, and I've just learned about the nuances of this recently in the past, I don't know, 5 or 6 months. We are not only, as an example, my soul essence was first birthed on the planet Dakota in the Pleiades thousands of years ago. Okay, I accept that as a given. Our souls don't originally come from this planet. Even way back when, the people that were the first, as some people call them, the Lemurians, even they didn't come here originally. They weren't from here. They came here, and that's my point. So first of all, we don't come from this world. Second of all, we don't come from... We're not purely, as you know, we're not purely a human body. We are predominantly a soul animating a human body. But more importantly, and here's the analogy that I use, in my conversations with the primary, the commander of the primary Andromeda Council biosphere and others, other people from the Andromeda Council that I to communicate with, I've learned that the human soul is much, much larger than we realize. Think of it as, here's my analogy, like a 24-slice extra-large pizza. Pretty big. And it really only takes about one slice of that human soul pizza to animate a human body. And at the same time, there are other slices of our total soul or oversoul that are doing other things, either in a higher dimension or in 3D or maybe 4D or 5D in other star systems, on other planets, other worlds, simultaneously. So we truly are what you said earlier, Peter. We are truly multidimensional intelligent life forms that are having simultaneous experiences. So we're not only doing things here in this 3D Earth life, but we're doing other things on other places all at the same time. That's the short version of the explanation.
No, and it's explained very, very well, I think. With that said, what would you like to go into now in terms of some of, I guess, the meat of you all saying before we start the show of the information that you're getting these days on information and what can you share with us?
Ah, well, that's a good question. Of course, there are a lot of people wondering, when are we finally going to get through this time of transition? When are we finally going to transform and become a mid-level fourth dimensional world? People use other words, but I'm going to use my terminology. And the answer is, we still yet have to go through a process of transition on this planet. There are some events that will need to happen on this world, both man-induced, human-induced, as well as events happening out in space, out in the cosmos, that will directly affect this planet. Now, there's a lot of stuff going on right now anyway. As an example, there's probably more magma flowing under the crust of the Earth right now than any other time in her history, in this planet's history. There are more earthquakes popping off than ever before, probably going back until the last change that this planet had. And that doesn't necessarily mean dimensional shift. Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. All right.
A little bit skippy, but it's fine.
Yeah, okay, so it came back. Great. It's not so much that there was a last dimensional shift. To be very specific, my Andromeda Council contact people have told me many times that this is the first time that an organic planet, not only this planet, but this whole solar system, is entering an energy of space, a very dynamic, higher vibratory area of space. And it's the first time when it happens that this, not only this planet, but others, will go from being a dense organic world to becoming a higher dimensional fine essence matter world. Now I'm going to explain my words a little bit. Fine essence matter. Fine essence matter means matter and life that exists based on energy, specifically light energy. This is the same matter that animates what people call the spirit realm, or 4D, 5D, and higher. Everything from 4D up is spirit realm life form. It's all life forms based on energy. And as evidenced by the December 21, 2012 change of the inner core of this planet from, you know, molten red hot iron, a couple of things have happened. The inner core of our planet is now essentially as hot as the sun. And is this has actually been verified by some geophysicists and astrophysicists on this planet. Already been verified. They don't understand the changes. They don't know how they've happened, but they can verify that they've happened, and the fact that the inner core of our Earth is as hot as the sun. Andromeda Council scientists are calling this new energy source SAR, S-A-R, which is, of course, very, very close to the word star. That's no mistake. So this process of transformation to becoming a higher dimensional world is the process of going from organic to fine essence matter. And one of the first steps is the inner core of the Earth becoming much like that of a star. Peter, can you still hear me?
Yeah, mate. Yep.
Okay, great.
Still here.
Great. Okay. So, of course, everybody wants to know when. And the reality of the situation is, it's not a matter of when according to a certain timetable. It's a matter of what Earth human events, what Earth events that are geomagnetic, geotectonic, that are driven by events happening in the cosmos. When there's a peak of all of these events that have yet to happen, at the peak of all of these events, that is when the transformation of this world to a higher dimension will take place. And only at the peak of those events is when the change from an organic Earth to a higher dimensional Earth will take place. And right now, as a matter of fact, a recent conversation just a couple of nights ago with my contact people with the Andromeda Council, I've asked them what's going on, and they've said, essentially, we are checking the perimeter of the solar system, making sure that the energy grid is in place, that it's keeping any space-based large objects out of our solar system, that it's keeping any really bad guy ETs out of our solar system. And they are simply being patient and waiting for the necessary events to come into play for our planet to go through the transition process and then the transformation process for it to become a higher dimensional world. I said, what about all that preparation? I know months ago you guys were moving around like crazy, getting ready. And they said, we're ready. We're all prepared. We're ready to go. Now things have to gel. They have to happen on your planet first. And that was a conversation that just happened a couple of nights ago. So I guess from a things happening perspective, we must be getting closer because we've got more earthquakes popping off. There are certainly more volcanoes popping in your corner of the world. There's a lot going on dynamically on this planet right now. So that's kind of an update in terms of what's going on right now.
Definitely. And from one of my contacts, it's been similar information that where we are in galactic plane right now, this is the energetic effects with the Earth changes. And it's not just happening on Earth. It's happening on all the planetary bodies within the solar system where there's just slightly heating up, but It's because the energy is making the tectonic plates and everything move,
yes.
And there's everything's aggravated through the energetic changes.
Yes, absolutely. As a matter of fact, in 1997, you know, I'm learning this information from pretty typically three of my five Andromeda Council contact people. That's where I get information. And of course, I do some intuitive wandering around on the web from time to time, and I learned, probably within the past year and a half, that there was a report that was originally provided. I saw an iteration of it in 2010, and then I saw what I thought was the original in 2002. In 1997, there was a report provided by the Russian Academy of Sciences. And they said back then that we were essentially, this solar system was entering a very busy, higher energy, higher magnetic area of space. And not only was planet Earth changing, now this is 1997 when this report was written, not only was the planet Earth changing, but they were measuring increases in luminosity, magnetics, storms, just plain old storms, the certain resonance, like on planet Earth, we have something called the Schumann resonance. There were about five or six different categories that they were able to measure based on every single planet in the solar system. Mars, Pluto, Jupiter, Saturn, all of them are registering increases in all the things I mentioned, including heat. They're warming. They're all warming up. When we were kids, well, at least when I was a kid, the photos that we saw of Mars had southern and northern polar ice caps. Those ice caps are diminished severely. There's almost nothing left of them. So we have, even on Earth, a set of very well-accredited scientists that are saying, that started to say back in 1997, this, not only is this planet changing, but all of the planets in the solar system are changing. And I found that an amazing piece of confirmatory information. And people, if people get on the web and they key in, like to Bing or Google, 1997 report, Russian Academy of National Sciences, planetary report, something like that, it'll come up for them. They'll be able to read it themselves. It was amazing.
It definitely is. And it just, again, it's just correlating confirmation,
right,
on different levels. People can do with it what they may, but for people like us, when we come across this type of information, it's just correlating on another level with what we're experiencing and being told, and, you know, getting out there as well. With that said,
yes,
what other beings are you working with, or that works with the Andromeda Council? Because obviously there's a conglomerate type situation where they work in sync, from my understanding, with what I've experienced. But are you able to go into any of that sort of information?
I can share a little bit of insight. As an example, Good ETXSG, also known today as Corey Good. He's been doing his thing for a while, but he's been very busy since March of this year, doing a lot of collaborative work with David Wilcock, releasing a lot of information, especially about something called either the Sphere Being Alliance or the Sphere Alliance. I can state categorically, at least based on what my people are saying, and we've got the Council, the Andromeda Council, actually known in deep space. It's known in deep space as the Galactic Council. We know it here on Earth as the Andromeda Council, but when they're doing their thing with other planets, and there are ambassadors and diplomats and delegates, they know them simply as the Galactic Council. They represent about 50% of the membership of what Corey calls the Sphere Alliance. As a matter of fact, there are three Andromeda Council biospheres that are very close to, in and around, protecting Earth space. And the other nine are pretty much ringing the solar system and part of an overall grid network providing, I guess the best thing you could call it is an energy shield, an energy grid, a force field maybe. And it kind of looks, they were showing it to me, it kind of looks like if you looked, if you're way outside of the solar system, interestingly enough, looking at this solar system and you're outside seeing it, the energy grid would actually kind of look like the shape of a Pleiadian scout craft, what people typically call the UFO. It's sort of like...
It'd be the Taurus field.
Yeah, well, it's kind of, it looks kind of like a plate upside down on top of a plate right side up, literally. Yeah. You know, a plate that you'd eat off of with the natural curves to it. And they showed it to me. I said, this is kind of what it looks like. I'm like, wow. Yes, there's a toroidal field there, but highly interesting that that shape almost exactly mimics what people call UFOs, at least in terms of a shape. So the point is, the people in the Andromeda Council, known in deep space as the Galactic Council, are very involved in this Sphere Alliance, as well as many other races. And keep in mind, you know, the Andromeda Council has people from, I think the most senior member is from the star Arcturus, and their senior homeworld is Petola. There are people from the Antares star system, M103, Procyon, Vega, Capella, Polaris, Cirrus A. They're all, their senior homeworlds are all involved in this Sphere Alliance. Like I said, at least 50% of it. Yeah, so they're busy.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I'm still learning, you know, about a lot of this as well. And what I'm understanding from what I've heard so far, and, you know, I'll have to talk to Corey to confirm this, but I've been interacting with beings that gave me the word Elohim, and they're not gods or anything. They said angels would be the closest thing they are to them. When I've interacted with them, they go from blue spears about the size of your fist baseball to 7 foot light beings that are sometimes whitish in color, sometimes a light blue color, and sometimes rainbow. And I'm thinking these may be the same beings as the avians, because I think the avians is just a projection. That bird type being is a projection of what these beings' true nature is. You know, it goes into the spear type thing, which is what I've been interacting with. And I think that these beings don't care what they're called. They're just giving humans, while we're in a human form, a reference due to us thinking linear and needing to label things to get information out. So I'm thinking these are all sort of the same type of thing.
Yeah, as an example, when people talk about seeing orbs of light, you know, whether they're sparkling colors, whether they're blue or green, pretty typically, most times that people are seeing orbs, excuse me, whether they're the size of a baseball, a softball, a basketball, a sack of ball, pretty typically, they're simply higher dimensional beings that have shrunk themselves down to a small ball shape for the convenience of travel. They just take their large form and they shrink it down. It's a convenient, easy way to travel. And I know that people, at least from the fifth level, you know, mid-level 5D, can do that easily. And they do it all throughout the solar system. Very, very easy. And the other thing to note is higher dimensional beings, whether they're 4D or 5D, they can, focusing their energy, manifest a form. They can make it look like a humanoid, you know, a bird looking humanoid form. They can make it look like anything that they want to. They just can. Now, the people from the planet Dakota, they look the way they do because when they were originally organic people, that's how they looked. They look like the people that look like Native Americans throughout the Western U.S. today. Back on the planet Dakota, when they were still organic in 3D, that's the way they looked. So they choose to project that same look now as, I think they're like 5.3. If they're like 10 or 12 levels of each dimension, they're like 5.3, I think, is where they're at. So, absolutely, higher dimensional people can manifest themselves into almost anything, including a little teeny ball or a bigger ball, and they just scoot around wherever they want to go. And moreover, pretty typically at mid-level 5D and up, a lot of them work in groups, you know, what people might call soul groups.
Yeah.
Pretty typical. And they, you know, they might come to Earth or any other place and observe for certain sociological reasons, scientific reasons. I mean, the reasons are myriad, but that's where the concept of soul group really comes from, is that people who have like-minded interests just simply to start to work together.
Yeah, it's same from what I'm experiencing as well. So, you know, there's just more confirmation and correlations on multiple different levels. And with that said, what's the basis of your experiences in terms of, is a lot of it more telepathic, and then sometimes you're being taken in a physical form? You know, how does this sort these experiences take place for yourself?
Yeah, a good question. I asked this question within the past, I think, 6 or 7 months, and they said, okay, we communicate with you a lot in what you call the sleep state or the dream state. There's a lot of interaction going on. It's obvious to me, but in any case, for me, I speak with them telepathically quite a bit. And what that means is, just like you and I are talking on the phone right now, I'll have conversations with them mind to mind. Our minds are communicating, not our mouths.
Yeah.
They show me a lot of snapshot images. They show me what could be considered like video shorts, you know, that maybe run 30 seconds, 45 seconds, a minute and a half. Other times, my physical body will be sleeping, and my spirit essence, that pizza slice that operates this body, will leave planet and go up on the Andromeda Council biosphere, and I'll work for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever. Or 3 or 4 days, and I'll come back, of course, before I wake up in the morning. Sometimes I'm gone like 16 or 18 minutes or 24 minutes, and I'll be gone 3 or 4 days. There's no, when you get to the higher dimensions, and actually this question is a really good segue to this story. I had this conversation with, again, with the commander of the primary Andromeda Council biosphere, and I had said, you know, I've been a student of time for quite a while in past generations, and I'm really trying to wrap my head around this concept and have a better understanding from a comparison standpoint. And he said, okay. So I said, you're telling me, you've told me that I've been coming down to this planet. You know, We know that there were a lot of souls that have come from a lot of different star systems and planets that have been coming to this planet for about 100,000 years. He said, yes, that's correct. And you said to me, because I asked them, you said to me that I've been coming to this planet for about 75,000 years and that I needed some additional training. Like, yeah, okay. So we get that one straightened out. So I've been coming here for 75,000 years. And you also tell me that I've been living and working with you and your people on the Andromeda Council biosphere for a long, long, long time, many, many years. Not from my perspective, and here's the question, not from my perspective, but from your perspective, all of you that know me up on the Andromeda Council biosphere, you tell me, using an Earth time reference, that I've been traveling and living Earth lives for about 75,000 years. Like, yes, that's correct. Okay, so from your perspective, up in the Andromeda Council biosphere, how long does it feel like to you guys that I've been gone? And he paused and he said, using Earth language? I said, yes, you know, give it to me in Earth terms. He said, about a year and a half, kind of like you've been on a year and a half business trip. And I went, what? I was speechless. I could not even form my next statement after I heard that. I was blown away. I tell that story because I think it's one of the few times that anybody is able to articulate the difference between an Earth life. So, you know, the slice of that soul, that one pizza slice, enters the woman's body when the child is, I don't know, 8 months and a week, or maybe 7.5 months, the child gets sentience and intelligence. The child's born through the birth canal, and he or she lives a life that is sometimes 35, 65, 57, 52, sometimes 12, all sorts of things happen. But let's say that average Earth human life is 72, 74, 75 years.
It's fascinating stuff on that point.
And
it is different, the human existence, compared to the existence, you know, in the other realms.
Completely different. And here's the comparison. When a 4D or 5D person says, I'm ready, I've had enough experiences, and typically it's like, the way we would calculate time for them, it's like 7,000 or 8,000 years, that kind of duration. And I go, I'm ready to become a sixth dimensional person. Or if I'm 4D, I'm really ready to live a 5D life with 5D experiences. And they wish it to happen, they intend it to happen, and it simply happens. And if there were a bunch of 4D people around, and a couple of 4D people were deciding to leave, they would probably hold a ceremony for them and have a party and say goodbye. And the 4D people, the moment that they would start to transform into 5D, all of those 4D people watching them, the two 4D people, they would see them just start to disappear. Because they're raising up in vibration and frequency. The rest of those people can't see them anymore. That's all that happens. There's no death at all. So they're going thousands of years in any segment of their life, which is thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And we live, if we're lucky, we live 75 years. All done, finished, time to start over again. It's an amazing comparison.
Definitely is. Now, out of, you know, all the interviews and things that you have done, what do you think is the main information that you have got out that you feel is, like, not that any of it's not of benefit, because it's educating people, it's reconnecting people, but what do you think is the really important information in there, like, to help people help themselves with what you've been saying and experiencing?
Wow. It's an important question with a profound answer. And yet, as profound as the answer is, it's really simple. Mm-hmm. I've said it different ways, many different times, but essentially the answer is, whoever you are out there, I would recommend that you live your life to the fullest. Discover who you are internally. All of those things that bring you your greatest joys. Do them as much as possible. Help other people out. If you've had a difficult life and you're carrying the energy of emotional trauma, I would recommend that you find a way to heal from that, to release it, to transmute it, and live a life that's literally much lighter and much more joy-filled. Because we are here to primarily have a set of experiences to essentially learn about who we truly are. You know, who are you, Peter Slattery? What makes you tick? What brings you the most amount of joy? What are you best doing? What would you prefer to be doing most of the time, regardless of how much money you or anybody else earns? And the other piece I would add to that is be kind to people. Just, it's that simple. Simple acts of kindness. Find ways to help people that it's just because it's the right thing to do. And everything else will take care of itself. Really will. Including
the fly.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Including all of the transitory things that are going to happen during the transition time of this planet. And things are going to get more dicey. They're going to get more dicey socially. They're going to get more dicey politically. They're going to get more dicey from a geological earth change perspective.
you're going now exactly where I was going to ask next, which is from your information and experience with what's going on in terms of we've covered the Earth changes and some of the changes where we are in galactic plane now, but what are some of the social changes we are looking at from your point of view and your understanding with what's going on?
I think part of it's happening right now. I was speaking with a friend of mine recently, a somewhat new friend, Shailia, over in Hawaii. As an example, she was saying that David Wilcock reported recently that in his new Gaia TV series with Corey Good, they now officially have more viewers than CNN. That's astounding. Anybody would love that kind of success, but I'm not bringing it up because of the success factor. I'm bringing it up because
it shows the shift in consciousness from mainstream crap to looking at consciousness and other things. Yeah,
that's exactly it. That's exactly the point.
That's huge.
Yeah, it is huge. And I have not verified this, but Shailia is a very good friend, and she's a very bright woman, has her own higher dimensional gifts and skills. So I think that piece of information is one piece of evidence. I think that we'll see other things in the future, of people individually as well as people in groups stepping up and saying, no more. We're not going to allow this kind of behavior any longer. Some of that is already happening with the movement against companies that produce genetically modified food. A lot of countries in the EU, certainly states in the US, some are more progressive than others, are saying, we're not allowing this food into our state, we're not allowing it into our stores, we're not serving it. So that's one way that things are happening. I believe that as some of the more difficult Earth changes start to happen, and people see firsthand that the governments can't really help them, there's going to be a massive shift. And people are going to go, you couldn't help us before, you can't help us now, get out of our way. We are going to start taking care of ourselves. Not you, the politicians, us. And I think we're going to see massive change in governmental structures across the world that'll kind of be a domino effect. And I see that happening once some of the bigger Earth changes start to happen.
Well, I don't know if you guys know about it over there yet, but here in Australia, it's still got to be finally passed, but it's passed through the lower house from my understanding, is that families are not getting benefits and certain kids won't be able to go to certain schools if they aren't immunized.
Wow.
So that is a huge change. And what we're looking at now, instead of a so-called democracy, which is still a label, and if we look at Labor, Liberal, Republic, Democrats, whatever, it's all the same crap under different names. And here in Australia, what we're experiencing right now is basically National Socialist type of stance on the Australian people, and I think it's because things started here, whether people want to believe that or not, in terms of what happened on Earth long ago, and things are going to end here in terms of the new cycle and change. There's lots going on here in Australia, and people just have to see the shows I've done with Stephen and Evan Strong about that. But now, to see that now the governments have a say what you can and cannot put into your bodies in terms of vaccinations, which, in my opinion, don't even have any basis, and people are blindly being injected. I actually heard about a story yesterday where a kid was injected at school and the parents weren't notified. There was no form signed or anything, and they still don't know what that child was injected with. So what we're seeing now is we're seeing an uprise on the other side, and I'm not putting fear into people, but what I'm saying is this is a sign of change, that the other side is upping their weaponry and what they can do as we progress through with consciousness, which is the key to all this, is a higher level of consciousness. This will surpass anything else. And like Albert Einstein said, and I quote it all the time, you can't solve a problem the same level of consciousness that created. That's therefore
That's right.
think outside the box, people.
That's right. That's right. And the parents of these children that have children in school, they have to raise hell. If they want change, they have to say, we're not doing this. And the system will, the system will shout and scream and pout like little children. But then the parents would have to say, you want to be this way? We're pulling our child out of your school. There has to be, like anything else in life, cause and effect. And the system has to know that they can't blatantly do things and just get away with it. And if people just keep rolling over like a dog with their belly up, then the system will keep just keep stepping on them.
Well, this is the thing. It's for the kids and their kids and so forth that if we don't stand up and do something now, it's going to be so bad that by the time we've had enough, we won't be able to do anything. And we're very lucky that my partner's three children haven't been immunized. And it's funny because we see so many of our friends and our family's kids that they're sick all the time, but these kids seem to be sick once in a blue moon. So, you know, we're in a situation where we're not putting up with it. And the school, luckily, the kids were in there before this was put in. But there's, you know, so many people that need government benefits out there that if their kids aren't immunized, they're not going to get it. And apparently they're going to try and put this on the adults as well. They're trying to make a immunized system for adults as well. So it's just time for people to up the ante on their end and start working around the government rather than with it, because what we're doing as a collective ain't working.
I was in a very fun, lighthearted conversation after a meeting of a bunch of us in Tucson. About 2.5 years ago. It was an August meeting. Bob Dean was sitting there. Jim Nichols, a bunch of other people. Long story short, there was a young woman sitting next to me. She was probably 28 or so. And she was a young mother. And we were talking about her experience. And she said that she was in the hospital and they tried to force her to give the child what we call in this country a social security number during the process prior to leading up to the birth. Now, she had done everything natural prior to that point. They were trying to force her to give this child a social security number. So before the process went any further, apparently the nurse or whoever it was went to get the administrator. The woman left the hospital. She never came back. She's like, I'm not going to be controlled by the system. And to this day, her child still does not have a social security number. He's like
basically giving them a serial number and owning them.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's bad. Bad, bad, bad.
It's definitely a sad situation. But, you know, like you said, it's just people have got to stand up and do something about it. And this is where, again, it's not the fear of God scenario, but what it is being aware of things going on throughout the world. You know, a few months ago, I said, no, that's not going to happen. And still, it hasn't fully been passed, but it looks like it's going to be. And therefore, well, these are things where, you know, around the world, I think in America, you're not even allowed to capture your rainwater, are you, in certain states?
I've never heard that. That's pretty draconian. Wow.
Yeah, that's what we've heard over here. There's actually, I've seen articles and stuff on it. Now, whether it's exactly true or not, this is the thing where I always say I'm not sure 100% because I haven't got the time to investigate with how busy I am. But, you know, people can go and Google it and that out there, and apparently that's the situation in some areas. So this is where...
Well, if somebody's saying it, I can see why. A good friend of mine has been a gardener of primarily of his own vegetables for years. And summertime last year, and this is in the desert Southwest, so, you know, we get our monsoon rains, and he walked outside, and one of his rain buckets, he looked down, and he saw this kind of, like, oily, but worse than that, the sort of, like, milky white slick on top of this bucket of fresh rainwater. So I went, that doesn't look right. Now, keep in mind, this bucket is not sitting out under some old tin shed. It doesn't have water that's dripping into the bucket. It's a bucket that's out in the open with some other buckets. And matter of fact, all these buckets had this milky, slicky, milky looking slicky rainwater. Make a long story short, he captured it in a vial. He has a buddy who works at a local university. He sent it for analysis, and his friend, we'll call his friend Philip, he goes, so Philip at the university says, where'd you get this? He said, oh, it was just out my backyard. He said, okay, you want to tell me what it is? He said, no, it's just rainwater. Would you take a look at it? He goes, yeah, sure. So he looks at it. Barium, strontium, aluminum, all sorts of other heavy metals. God. And guess what? This guy lives in Arizona, and he lives in an area that is heavily chemtrailed.
Yep.
So sometime, sooner rather than later, and I know our higher dimensional friends are taking care and negating some of the cause and effects of that, but sometime sooner or later, the people that are doing this chemtrail spraying have got to be caught, and they've got to be brought up in some kind of war crimes tribunal. Because
definitely, and I think people should go and watch something called What in the World Are They Spraying? I saw that not too long ago, and I think it was a pretty well put together documentary with some of the scientific evidence backing up that this is a real reality.
Oh yeah, it's really happening. I happened to be walking outside later that summer, so I was talking to this buddy of mine, and this was like early June, and I was doing some work at a nursery. And so we visited from time to time, and I happened to be out there like about 1:30 in the afternoon, about 2 months later. And it was just before, and it seems that these chemtrail things happen just before a front comes in and rains. They know exactly when they're spraying.
Yep.
And they had sprayed between like 9:30, 10 in the morning until about, I don't know, 1 in the afternoon. And it was the first time I'd ever had a cause and effect. My eyes were burning. They're not itching, but they were burning from this particulate matter coming, streaming down, being released from the chemtrail spraying. I was not a happy camper. So it's
My partner and I experienced that at James's ranch, actually. Like, we have it here in Australia, but not so much. But when we got to the States, it was, in a lot of places, they were actually sort of crisscrossing over the ranch. And my partner especially felt the effects in a sinus. So,
wow.
This is going on.
Yeah, this is one of the issues. Somehow, there've got to be some group of people that rise up and say, this is no longer acceptable. We need answers. If we don't get answers, we're taking you to a world court. There's got to be some court of justice that can hear and address this issue. Because I understand it's happening in the UK, it's happening in Australia, it's happening in France.
Yep. And even pilots to come forth saying that this is going on.
Yes. Oh, yeah, and you can, you'd almost have to be from another planet not to be able to tell the difference. Because you can look up in the sky and see a passenger airline jet with its normal contrail. And as a comparison, the contrail may be an inch and a half or 2 inches in the sky. But a chemtrail, these things are feet long. Now, of course, they're miles long, but as we look at them, they seem to be multiple feet long, or meters, as you guys might say. So even visually, they just look different. But it was that story from this gentleman. He's like, they found some other stuff, but primarily barium, rhodium, something like that, strontium, aluminum. He's like, where did this come from?
He's like, your backyard. The aluminum is through the roof as well, where it's affected the plants that bad, especially in Los Angeles and Hawaii, that everything's basically starting to turn yellow. Dead.
Yes.
Definitely a sad thing. But look, we'll wrap it up here at the moment, Tolek, and I'm glad that this lasted as long as it did in terms of how long this last connection's gone for. So, I'd love to be able to do this again, and hopefully it's not as bad next time, because we've had 3 or 4 attempts at trying to do this show, and it was just shocking.
Yeah. The first time, it's because I was in a Starbucks, and it was just 10 times too loud. We couldn't even hear each other. But, but yeah, this has been a pleasure, and I'm happy to chat with you for for all of your Australian mates and explore any of the topics that you think are interesting. Absolutely.
Definitely. We'll wrap it up there. Again, Tolik, thank you very much. There's going to be links underneath this show or where you've downloaded this show as well to Tolik's website as well. So keep posted, everyone. Again, Tolik, thank you very much, and we'll talk soon, mate.
Peter, thanks so much. Enjoyed it.